and welcome to the Informed Traveler Podcast, part of the Informed Traveler Radio Show, which is heard on Chorus Radio each week. It's a travel podcast where our goal is to help you become a more informed traveler, and I'm your host, Randy Sharman. So last week, Jasper National Park tweeted out something about reintroducing a notice of restriction when it comes to wildlife viewing practices, meaning that you must stay in your vehicle when viewing wildlife from the road. And that got me thinking it might be a good idea to review Parks Canada's tips about respecting wildlife and replay the interview we did back in August with Parks Canada. So we'll do that a bit later in the podcast. Plus, we'll head to the island of Bermuda to learn about the Rosewood Bermuda, a beautiful resort right on the waterfront. So if you're dreaming about laying on a beach somewhere, this is a resort for you. But to start our podcast this week, we're going to talk about Booking.com's recent back-to-travel survey on what Canadians are thinking when it comes to their travel plans this summer. Maybe it is laying on a beach somewhere. So joining us now to sort through the findings is Adriana Mantilla, Regional Manager for Canada at Booking.com. Hi, Adriana.
Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm excited to hear a little bit about this Back to Travel survey. I like the name of it, Back to Travel, because I think we would all kind of like to get back to traveling. Tell me a little bit about the survey and some of the general findings that you got from it. Was anything surprising?
I think more than surprising, I think it confirms us that there's a big appetite for people to go back to travel. People have realized how much travel is important for their mental health. And that even though safety is the first thing that we need to really figure out, the appetite is telling us, and 72% of Canadian travelers are most hopeful about traveling in 2021, and also a big correlation with that, with the vaccinations increase that we hope are coming even faster.
Well, yeah, all you have to do is just take something away from someone. Before long, they want it back really quick, and that seems to be the case with traveling. And you mentioned vaccines. I think vaccines play a big role in this, right?
Yes, the appetite for travel. We have been seeing that people are really thinking about, 72% of the Canadians are seeing as the vaccine as one of the big parts. And even with the vaccine, we are seeing that people just need to have the vaccine in order to travel abroad. So even traveling abroad or traveling domestic, it's going to be a huge correlation of how much the industry recovers.
Yeah, and I think it's you can't travel without a vaccine, but people don't seem to want to go unless they've been vaccinated, right? They want to make sure that they're protected, and they want to make sure that they're protecting others.
Exactly. And I think that's why one of the compromises that we've been seeing from the industry is the part of vaccination, but also the part of safety first. And one of the things that I think was super interesting is that we already know that 70% of properties that are booking have been increasing health and safety. So even though vaccination is quite important, and that would be like one of the main drivers, also they have been trying to say to be agreeing with masks, also to be able to, in our site, we're filtering the part of health and safety. And every time the clicking of the customers there is more important than ever.
Well, and I think, yeah, by now we're over a year into this pandemic. I think most people are pretty much used to, you know, having to wear a mask if they're going to a restaurant or anywhere on transportation, that sort of thing. And I think the accommodation industry, the hotel industry, has done a really good job overall in making sure, like, they were one of the first ones to come out with the high standards for cleaning, making sure that, you know, that their occupancy rate wasn't too full, those types of things. And they've been doing this for over a year now. So I think they've done an excellent job with that, almost leading the world in how to do things.
No, totally agree. And I think that one of the things is all the things that they have been able to adapt. And also one of the things that we are seeing, and it's vital, and I also see the properties adapting all over Canada, is flexing the cancellation policies. So they're doing a great job of understanding how they need to have a cancellation policy. And also one of the things that has been also very good is how they are communicating to the guests for them to have more information, and also to be very compliant with the regulations of the places that they are located on.
And your survey reflects that too, right? With the accommodation providers, they're seeing an increased interest in travel for this year and beyond this year as well, right?
Exactly. One of the things that has been super interesting is that the search for summer is amazing. We see a July and an August very high on searches, and even we're seeing that people are also considering September as a very big big month.
Do you have any numbers on how far people are booking out? Like, are they looking into 2022, or is this sort of just for this year, this summer? And are they looking domestically, or are they looking beyond Canada's borders?
Great question. The first thing that we're seeing is that we see in searches a lot of peak for these 3 months, but we are also seeing already people thinking about the ski season of 2022. So this is also something that is happening. When we go to trends, we see a lot of nature, places that are located in nature-wise. And we're still seeing a lot of domestic and local traveling and a lot of appetite. We're seeing like 67% of people are saying, I'm going to stay in Canada. I'm still going to discover it. And I don't see that changing in the near future.
And it seems to me, looking briefly at the numbers too, that the kind of holiday people are looking for, they want to hit the beach or outdoors, like you say, not so much visiting cities.
Yes, you're right on spot. We're only seeing 4% of people wanting to go to the cities, and 51% with a lot of hope that they can hit the beach. And one of the things that I was reading, Randy, is that we almost have 1 million of lakes in Canada. So imagine how many lake beaches we have and a lot of nature to discover. So that appetite for that is there.
Yeah, every time I think of beach, I think of the ocean. I always forget about the lakes, and we do have a lot of beautiful lakes in this country. Anything I've missed you want to add?
No, well, I think that there are amazing destinations that people want to discover, and the searches are amazing for Kelowna, Jasper, Osorio, Blue Mountains, Banff, Muskoka, and Quebec City, and just thinking about it, it's making us dream of where we want to go next.
Adriana Menti is Regional Manager Canada for Booking.com. You can find their survey, Back to Travel Survey, on the Booking.com website. Always fun to chat with you, Adriana. Thank you.
Thanks to you, Randy. I'm very happy to be here always.
Well, if one of your dream vacations is to visit the island of Bermuda, there's a beachfront property just waiting for you to arrive. It's the Rosewood Bermuda. And here now to tell us more about the Rosewood Bermuda and visiting Bermuda in general is Eva Chan. She is the Director of Sales and Marketing at the Rosewood Bermuda. The website is rosewoodhotels.com. Hi, Eva.
Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm kind of wishing that I, be in Bermuda right now, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a few of us love that opportunity. Yeah, we're all kind of wishing that we're all in a tropical getaway at this point. I think a lot of people are itching to get out of their homes eventually, right?
Well, for sure. Tell me a little bit about the Rosewood brand, though, to begin, and the story of the Rosewood Bermuda.
Sure. Rosewood Hotel is a small company. It's a up and growing company. We have 27 hotels in the collection currently. We have a lot in the pipeline that's about to open in beautiful destinations from the Caribbean to Europe to Asia. So we're super thrilled for that to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. Each hotel is very unique. It really has its sense of place, which is what the model of the company is. Even though it is part of the Rosewood brand, each hotel really reflects its own reflective of the destination. So for Rosewood Bermuda, it's a perfect property for the destination. The property sits on 240 acres of waterfront property, which includes 91 guest rooms, a golf course, a beach club, tennis facility, a spa, and 4 pools. So for anyone that's looking to do something really unique in Bermuda and want to stay at Rosewood, we are the perfect property for it.
You had me at beachfront and 4 pools, I think.
Yes. So, if you don't like the beach and you want to just be more of a pool person, we have that for you, and vice versa. Food and beverage is also a unique feature as well. We have 3 restaurants and also 3 bars. So, and there's a lot to do off property as well. The island itself is only about 21 square miles with about 65,000 people on the island. Even though we are a tiny island, there is a lot to do off property. One of the unique features is really it's the sailing, the fishing, the water sports. And one unique thing that people really don't know about Bermuda is that there's a lot of underwater caves that are located throughout the island. And in fact, there's one at the Rose of Bermuda, and that you can go actually cave diving for anyone that's looking to do something really unique and really something that's more about Bermuda. And if you're adventurous, you can go with a guide and leave from our property and go cave diving and come out onto the other side of the island. So that's something unique that you might want to try out if you're ever wanting to come to Bermuda.
Wow, that is different and unique. Tell me about Bermuda itself, what life has been like in the past year. I noticed on your website, at the top of it says the Rosewood Bermuda is open now. So that's good news.
Yeah, I mean, during the pandemic, when it first hit last year, we did close the hotel for about 3 months from April until June, which is basically Q2. And then as things got a little bit better and Bermuda really did a great job in managing the COVID situation last year. And so we were one of the few islands that were able to open earlier. And so the hotel did open in July, which is our peak season. Our seasonality is very distinctive. So we opened in July, and when we first reopened, the airlines were still closed. So they didn't really have the flights in place to really accept international guests to come in, but we did were able to accept our local guests. So there's a lot of local residences that wanted to get out of the house. And so we were able to open the hotel and accept local residences to come and stay with us. So it was more like a staycation.
Yeah.
So July, yeah, so it was good to start with that ramp up. And then when August came around, the flights and the airlines came back online. And then we were able to open the island and the hotel for international travelers. And so ever since then, we've been opened up until this point. So yeah, so we're still open and we're still accepting guests, and we are, you know, taking great care in ensuring our associates are kept safe, our guests are kept safe, following the guidelines of Rosewood commitment to care, as well as with the local Bermudian government guidelines to ensure that we follow those protocols as well. So everything has been going well for us. You know, despite the situation that's still ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about getting there. I understand it's about a 90-minute flight from New York City, and for those who maybe not know where Bermuda is, you're kind of stuck on your own away from the Caribbean islands and then in sort of the middle of the Atlantic. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are absolutely correct. We're about, I want to say, 600 miles off the coast of the Carolinas of the U.S. So our seasonality is very distinct. It's very much like the U.S. seasonality. So unlike the Caribbean, what's one thing that people don't realize is that we are not in the Caribbean. We're north of the Caribbean, and we are in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So our seasonality right now, just similar to the U.S., as I was saying, we're in our sort of our shoulder season in the spring, and we're getting ready for peak season, whereas the Caribbean is coming off their peak season and going into the low season. So, and also the flight air access is very easy to get to Bermuda from the East Coast. We have really great flights coming out of New York, from Boston, from Atlanta, from Charlotte, North Carolina, from D.C. So these flights are, from New York, for instance, is only 90 minutes. Also for international travelers from Canada and from the U.K. market, we do have some nice flights. Air Canada and WestJet is beginning their flights beginning June of this year. So we're excited to welcome back our Canadian travelers.
Mm-hmm. So how many rooms do you have? I'm looking again on your website. It's rosewoodhotels.com. And you just click on, you know, the Bermuda link to the Rosewood Bermuda. But how many rooms do you have? And describe them for me, because they look like you got little segments. It's not all one big building, is it?
Yeah, that's correct. So we have a total of 91 guest rooms. That includes our 2 and 3 bedroom residences, which is separate from the main hotel, which is the main hotel guest rooms is called the Manor House. That's where most of the majority of our guest rooms are located. The 2 and 3 bedroom Harbor Court residences are located in a separate building, but it's in the same area. We also have Harborview rooms and Harborview 1 and 2 bedroom suites. Those are located right below the Manor House building. So even though they are in the same location overall, it's in distinct separate areas of the hotel. What's a unique feature and a unique selling point for our guest rooms is that they all have ocean views, regardless of room type, which is a nice feature, especially when guests want to come to Bermuda to look at the ocean, because we are in the middle of the Atlantic, and why would you want to take advantage of the beautiful ocean views?
Well, for sure. We only have about 30 seconds. Anything that I've missed you might want to add?
No, but we're super excited to welcome Canadian travelers to come to Bermuda when flights are back in. Thank you so much for your support and ongoing support for Bermuda and the destination, and we look forward to welcoming you all back.
Eva Chan is the Director of Sales and Marketing at the Rosewood Bermuda. You can find more information on their website, rosewoodhotels.com. It was fun chatting with you, Eva. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Take care.
So last week, Jasper National Park tweeted out something about reintroducing a notice of restriction when it comes to wildlife viewing practices, meaning that you must stay in your vehicle when viewing wildlife from the road. And that reminded me of an interview we did last August with Steve Michel. He is a National Human Wildlife Conflict Officer with Parks Canada, and it's about 10 tips for respecting wildlife and staying safe. You can find them on the Parks Canada website, pc.gc.ca. So here's a replay of that conversation and a reminder of those tips now. Well, we're going to review 10 tips to respect wildlife and stay safe. It's on the Parks Canada website. Just off the top of your head, though, do you have any numbers on how often people come in conflict, and I'm going to use that word, with wildlife over the course of the summer in our parks?
Well, it really depends on the given park. Obviously, we've got a lot of different sites all across the country from coast to coast to coast, and some of them are a lot busier than others. So the places that people might think about the most often, the real busy parks like Banff and Jasper and places like that that are close to cities like Calgary and Edmonton, people come into contact with wildlife very often, actually. It happens many times a day in those busier parks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm not sure if we'll get through all 10 of them, but I guess a lot of the tips here are just common sense. But that being said, if you're not familiar with the animal or the surroundings, you don't know what you don't know. And that kind of leads into our first tip, doesn't it? Learn about the wildlife in the park you're visiting.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's something that people can do ahead of time. It's sort of what we call our pre-trip preparation, and we've got lots of great information on our website. All the parks have information on the particular species that are there, so people can go in ahead of time and, you know, take 5 minutes and just learn a little bit about the actual species that they're going to bump into at whatever park they're headed to.
Now, do people get sort of the wrong impression of animals? You know, like, I'm looking at bears, for example. People think they're cute, and you see them in zoos. When you actually see them in their environment, they're dangerous and stay away, right?
Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the key messages we always really want to get out to our visitors, is that these are wild animals, and you need to do your part to help keep wildlife wild. And it all comes down to giving them the respect that they deserve and the space that they deserve. These are wild animals, and sometimes they can be dangerous if you just get too close to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's good that you, in the title, it says respect wildlife. And I'm glad you said that, because we have to respect them. We are in their environment, right? That leads us to the second tip on here. Feeding wildlife is never allowed, and people like to do that, even with a chipmunk or something like that, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, it happens just far too often, and people think it's kind of innocent with a little chipmunk or a squirrel or a bird or something in a busy parking lot. But the reality is that those animals just continue to panhandle for human food, and ultimately they don't really survive if they if they lose their ability to forage naturally. And of course, it can become very, very dangerous when we're starting to talk about the bigger, more dangerous animals. And you mentioned bears earlier as a good example, but you know, wolves, coyotes, all these animals can become what we call food conditioned if they get a hold of human food or garbage, and then mm-hmm. they actively seek it out. And that is a really, really dangerous situation. So it's very important that people never directly feed wildlife. But the other thing that we're seeing these days that's a concern, particularly with COVID, is there's a lot more garbage showing up around places. People feel, I guess, a little reluctant to put their hands on a garbage can and, you know, maybe get contaminated or something like that. And so they leave garbage lying around. And we really want to stress that it's very important that that garbage gets into a secure, wildlife-proof container.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Tip number three, like a lot of people like to take their dogs with them, keep them on a leash, right? Or would you even say, like, can you leave your dog at home? What's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm a lifelong dog owner and a dog lover, and I appreciate how important it is that people have their pets with them. And they just need to understand that if they are going to bring their animal to a national park, it's the law that it must be on the leash all the time. But, you know, we do encourage people that it might be better to just, you know, leave that dog at home for the day. Leave it with your friends, leave it with your family, because it might not be the most appropriate place to take your dog. But if you do decide to bring it, it definitely needs to be on a leash.
Lots of people are out hiking these days. Timing is everything. Now, I suppose if you want to see wildlife, then you're going to go, as it mentions in on your website here, earlier in the morning or later in the evening. But that's the flip side. If you want to see wildlife, be careful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if you want to go out for a drive and safely see some wildlife from your car and stay inside your vehicle and get a few pictures, as if you're, you know, parked safely on the side of the road, that's great. You know, the early morning hours and the later evening hours are a good time to do that. But remember, if you're out hiking, that's when the wildlife is going to be most active and you're more likely to have an encounter. So those dawn and dusk periods are definitely the most concerning for having a potential encounter with wildlife.
And I think a lot of people go in those hours too because it's less crowded, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question it's a fantastic time to be out. It's my favorite time early in the morning. But we just encourage people to be very, very aware if that's the time that they choose to travel.
And you mentioned this briefly too, only stop if it's safe to do so. We see this all the time, a bear on the side of the road and suddenly there's cars parked everywhere. And if you're not watching, it can cause a huge collision, not only an encounter with the wildlife, right?
Oh, yeah. It's what we call a wildlife jam, and it can be quite a chaotic scene. And we understand that when people see a bear or some spectacular animal inside the road, they want to stop and get that once-in-a-lifetime picture. But you've got to stop in a safe place. You got to pull over onto the shoulder of the road. You can't be blocking traffic. It's dangerous for yourself. It's dangerous for everybody else on the road, and it's dangerous for the wildlife that might be trying to cross the highway. So only stop in a safe place, and if it's just too crowded, just keep on driving.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it seems to me whenever there's an encounter with a human versus animal, the animal always loses out. Like whether it's, you know, they're in a campsite looking for garbage or, you know, they have an encounter and suddenly someone gets hurt, the animal loses out, don't they?
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing that does tend to happen. And it comes back to what I was saying earlier about, food conditioned animals as an example. If they do get that taste of human food, it's very difficult to reverse that behavior. And unfortunately, that animal always ends up losing. So again, it's all about making sure that you give that animal some safe space and show it the respect it deserves to help keep it wild.
Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, a lot of this is just common sense, like keeping a safe distance from wildlife. What is a safe distance?
Well, that kind of depends on what the species is. So as sort of a blanket statement, we always say 30 meters away from any large animal. But if we're talking about the carnivores, things like bears or wolves, coyotes and cougars, we recommend that people be 100 meters away. But what we're noticing is a real trend these days that is a little bit disturbing. And it's not just us, but it's all around the world, is this selfie craze mm-hmm. that people have. And everybody wants to get that perfect picture to put on Instagram or whatever it is. And, you know, a selfie of themselves with the wildlife in the background. And they really lose all perspective as to how to, you know, keep a safe distance. And so we're always encouraging people that, you know, just kind of pause on the selfies and make sure that you're keeping safe first.
A couple more tips here. Stay alert and be aware of your surroundings. Kind of goes hand in hand with number 10, stay on the designated trails and respect all signs. So be aware of all those things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is sort of a common sense one. And you know, the fancy term I like to use for this is situational awareness. And that's, you know, it goes with everything that we do in life. Just be aware of what's going on around you. But particularly if you're out hiking that trail and, you know, you might be hiking through the middle of a berry patch and you see bear poop all around you, something like that, well, that's a real good indication that there's probably some bears nearby. So, just keep alert. And unfortunately, we see people who, again, in today's times, they've got their earbuds in, they're listening to their music as they're walking along the trail. Well, you may as well wear a blindfold as well if you're doing that, because you're just robbing yourself of your senses. So the more you can stay alert and be aware, the safer that you'll be. And that's good for yourself and it's good for the wildlife.
Mm-hmm. Have we seen an uptake? There were reports of, animal sightings earlier on because we weren't out in the parks, and then the parks opened up. So I guess the animals kind of got used to not having humans around, right?
Yeah, I just goes to show how adaptable wildlife is. And as soon as we kind of retreat a little bit and give them a little bit more space and there's less people in places, they get in there and use these locations. And we're seeing examples of that all across the globe in the early stages of the pandemic. But now, certainly in our national parks, we're back to what I would describe as fairly normal visitation levels. The user groups are different. It's mostly Canadians, of course, that are here, not international visitors, but there's lots of people in the parks and wildlife have, gone back to their more typical patterns that we would see.
Mm-hmm. It's 10 tips to respect wildlife and stay safe. You can find on the Parks Canada website, pc.gc.ca. And Steve Michel is the National Human Wildlife Conflict Officer for Parks Canada. Appreciate your input, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you, Randy.
And that is this week's Informed Traveler podcast. Remember, this is the podcast version of the Informed Traveler radio show, heard each week on Chorus Radio. You can find more information on the show at our website at theinformedtraveler.ca. So thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, let us know. Leave us a review. Tell a friend. And if you want to drop me a line, my email is randy@theinformedtraveler.ca. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/informedtraveler. Or you can follow me on Twitter at informedtraveler.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.